Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
She sat on the bed and she held my hand and we had a conversation and it was so real. She stood up and she just walked out the wall next to the bed, and the guides followed her. And I woke up and I felt I had seen my sister.
This is an opportunity to talk about past lives and spirit guides and the in-between. Excellent book, great read. I happen to have this backlogged and bookmarked to check out. It's called Before We Were Born. And because I waited long enough, there's actually a follow-up. So there's part one and part two. And honestly, I have not read the follow-up. I found it and decided, okay, I've got to bookmark it. Meet me in heaven. So here we go with the guest and the author, Kathleen Diane. And Kathleen has been there, done that, and she's going to help us along with this storyline.
I learned about past lives through mediumship. And because I learned that, I decided to write this book Before We Were Born and talk about those concepts in a fictional context.
What got you started? I read you were an attorney.
I was an attorney, and I technically still am, although I don't practice. I have been interested in the other side of life, in the afterlife, before life, for quite a while now. The thing that really triggered this for me is one of my sisters passed away abruptly, and we were very close. And I had an experience where I was sleeping. I remember it was kind of a chilly night, so probably maybe October this time of year. And she had passed in June, and I was still struggling with all this, of course. And I could see myself in this dream and the clothes that I had worn to bed, which was unusual because I went to bed with a turtleneck sweater on. And I could see myself in this dream, and I saw her walk over to me. And behind her were two people. I couldn't see their faces. I couldn't see their characteristics. I believe they were men, but that's as close as I could get. I could just see light around them. And she stepped forward. She sat on the bed and she held my hand and we had a conversation. And it was so real. She was there in my bedroom holding my hand, talking to me. We talked about, you know, her children that she'd left behind here and her passing. And we talked for a few minutes, and then she stood up. She told me, I'm coming back. I have to leave now. There was some sense of she had to go to a certain place or go through something for learning, something she had to go through. And she said, and then I'm coming back. If you don't feel me, that's why. So she stood up and she just walked out the wall next to the bed, and the guides followed her. And I woke up and I felt I had seen my sister. So that really struck my curiosity, and I became more interested in finding out about people who knew mediumship. I didn't realize that that was a mediumship experience for me at the time, but, you know, a number of things came up that made me want to explore that more. One of those things was I found out about the Spiritualist Church, and you know, they have mediums there, and they'll call on you, and they'll tell you there's someone standing near you, and they'll give you a message. And it became more normal to me, Wendy, if that makes sense. It became, there were other people out there who felt that life had not ended at death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it helps to have a support system.
Yeah, it absolutely does help, particularly because it feels, you know, foreign in some ways. Other ways, I mean, it's really like it's a natural process. So as I started to learn things, it felt like remembering instead of learning. But I did begin getting messages. And the way this all happened was kind of interesting because, you know, there was a Native American healer at this church that I frequented, you know, and he was giving me a healing one night. It was a healing class I was in. And he said, you know, you're a trance medium. And I said, oh, no. Surely I'm not. I had no interest in that. I didn't even completely understand it, but it sounded scary to me. He said, nope, you are. This is what's going to happen. And, you know, sure enough, like a little bit at a time, I was practicing meditation so that I would be able to see or pick up thoughts like other mediums I had met and witnessed. What started to happen to me is hearing. I'd start to hear certain words, and then the words would start to tumble from my mouth. And it came to the point where I was able to drop my consciousness to the point where the spirit I was working with would speak through me. And I found a comfortable place with that. In the beginning, I didn't like that feeling of my consciousness dropping so low. I felt like I'd lost control. It was, you know, inhibiting to me. So I found a comfortable place where I could work with spirits on the other side, and one of whom is, I mentioned in my book, Standing Bear, who is a Native American spirit who stays very close to me. And he can come through me very easily because we've practiced this together for years now. Like, this has been going on for a number of years, maybe 15 or 20 years. So he's very familiar. Sometimes with a new spirit that's passed over, comes through and they want to speak to someone through me, it's harder for them to speak through. And I feel more of in my body, it feels a little bit more difficult. And I might get a little bit of uneasiness in sort of my solar plexus and up through my chest and throat, mm-hmm. because they're trying to learn how to do this. And now I almost always do this with my husband. He's my partner in all of this. And he works as a grounding force for me. And that's true in life as well. Honestly, he is the mature one. He's the, you know, responsible one. And when I'm doing this, you know, communication with spirit, him sitting there with me helps me to feel grounded in the communication, and it changes the energy. So I have done, you know, readings for family members and friends, that kind of thing, and when he's not there. And I can do it, but it isn't quite as effective. It's a really interesting thing that there's some teamwork involved in this, at least in my mediumship.
I've had my similar experience, having somebody there that is your grounding force, someone that you feel free enough to release the tether that you have, or that's my language for it, mm-hmm. that I can really step out and feel confident that I'm not going to get stuck outside or pulled somewhere else that might be a little bit more complicated for me to get out, in terms of working with spirits, not just one, but multiples. For me, mine is a soul partner as well, and past life experiences, mm-hmm. been there with him. And that's why I liked your books, because I like the fact that this draws us in for people to kind of get a grasp of how, if they're not familiar, how it might work. And that's the stories that you lay out are beautiful, very romantic, but also in some way, hard to swallow, because it's not just the rosy outlook. It's all the conflict and the little pitfalls we find ourselves in as human beings, having a human experience and making a few mistakes here and there. And those are included in your books.
Yes, indeed they are. I've had some readers not very happy with me over that, to be honest. I don't write romantic fiction per se, which follows a certain formula. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, these happy ending that everything ties up and we're heading there the whole time. And for me, when I started learning that reincarnation is something that I've experienced, and I was able to get, you know, I've been given glimpses of some of my lives, and I've learned some things about my past lives. And, you know, interestingly, in one of my past lives, I was a storyteller. And I think I've been that way even as a child. I loved writing, and I loved stories, and I loved music. I still love music and lyrics, and it was always that. And I wanted to talk about these things that I learned without saying, hey, this is what happened to me. I wanted to put it in a way that is a little bit easier for people to relate to. And so I was making this, I made this story, the one that you read is called Before We Were Born. And it really starts with these two people before they're born. And that first chapter is a real leap of faith, because they're in the spirit world and they're making this decision to come forward. And one of them, you know, comes into this really lovely family. And this is the woman is Joy, that character in the book, and she chose that family because her mom in that family had been her mom in another life. And so it's this idea of soul families and soul partners. They often travel together, and that's what she's doing. But her partner, her soulmate, you know, makes the decision of who he's going to be born to based on her physical proximity to Joy, because he wants to make sure that they're going to be meeting each other. And he knows that once they meet, they'll recognize each other's, there's a strong bond between them from traveling through lifetimes. And so he's born on her street to a woman who is an alcoholic and a drug addict. And he's born prematurely with fetal alcohol syndrome. And he really is set back in life because of that. And even though he and Joy meet each other really as toddlers, he's, you know, he leaves his house and he wanders. He's not really watched over well. And he wanders into her yard and they become fast friends. And, you know, she's the only one that he speaks to as a young child. And, you know, they become so connected. And that's really the beginning of their life together. But things shift, as you said, you know, things happen, you know, and sometimes those things are outside our control. And sometimes they're just mistakes and they're life lessons, you know, and nobody here is living perfectly. So I wanted to show that, like, in real life, it's never going to be that you meet someone and say, this is my soulmate and I'm going to have a rosy path from here until I get to the other side and it's going to continue rosy and then we'll do it again. It's never going to be that, because if that happens, you're not having the experiences that you need to grow. So that's my explanation for why it's a rocky path sometimes. So if you're reading the book, I hope you'll bear with me and forgive those times that make you cry, because there are those times.
Okay. Well, just for a real life thing, I met the person I'm with now when we were 14 at a camp. And at one point he told me, he looked across the way and he said, that light is blinking at you. Do you see that light? Light's blinking. And I said, don't tell anybody this out loud because they'll think you're crazy. And so we did correspond for 4 years and then we split. And I thought that he was just a little bit, far out. 28 years later or so, this is in ballpark, we reconnect. And he's the one person I remember because of all of the back stuff that we had experienced and coming back and then remembering past lives. We were supposed to do that. We had a lot of growing up to do. That's why this book appealed to me. You don't recognize them necessarily. And like I told him, go away. Go away. And it wasn't pleasant. It was you know, it was difficult at the time. And then at one point, I think about 10 years later, I had somebody come in and wrote a check, and the name on the check was his. That person, I never was able to track that person down, ever. So, but it bookmarked it. It made me remember, interesting and curious. Okay, what happened to him? Don't know. At that time, I found out later, he had just gotten married. And there was no tracking, because the person I had with the address didn't exist. At least not that I could find. And so little things like that, when you know, there's this other element, I think, our spirit guides who are helping us. And whether it means we're pulled together or pulled apart, there are things here that we're not going to have answers for. And that's because there's a challenge ahead that we're destined, bound, guaranteed, obligated to meet. And I had some of those, and so did he. So there's this part in your book where I'm really frustrated with your character. Really. I mean, yeah, I understand exactly what your audience and your readers are saying.
Mm-hmm. Joy. You mean with Joy.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the people around her. But definitely with Joy. It's like, you know, just a bump on the head might help.
Yes.
more than once. She makes some really dumb moves. But at the same time, you can see how that would be possible. You set it up quite realistically to understand why those choices will be made about the priorities we have, the materialism that comes along with that, the security. And the thing of, you can't always follow your heart because it doesn't make sense. And there's the rub. it doesn't make sense.
Right. I like that. I mean, I think with Joy, because Jeremy is just a very endearing character, I think. He's very easy to love. And Joy has got sharp edges, you know, and she's been hurt very deeply by what happens, you know, when they're separated, when they're little, when they're young. And that goes very deeply, and that changed her. And he recognized it as soon as he came back, you know, that this is not the same Joy. But, you know, so all of that plays a role. But I also feel that, you know, in the real world, most young women in their 20s are not going to gravitate, I guess, towards somebody who doesn't seem to have a real grasp on living in the real world, as opposed to her, you know, ex-boyfriend from high school who's in medical school, and he's on a very steadfast path, and he's also extremely bright like she is. And I just think a lot of people, not just because of materialism, but because of the intellectual capacity that the two of them shared, whereas, you know, Jeremy has a lower IQ. On an academic level, he can't keep up with her. He can't, you know, do the things that she does or understand the things that she understands. But on a very different level, on the spirit level that they share, they communicate almost telepathically, mm-hmm. because they're so bonded that that's what has kept them together, that sense of like they belong together, and they feel that, and they know it.
That's one thing right now with the autists that they are talking about, with a lot of information coming out saying these kids are telepathic and they are communicating mm-hmm. in ways that we have neglected and overlooked and denied. So to find out now that there is this huge group who's all of a sudden leaps and bounds ahead of anybody else because they are communicating in a different way that we are all born with, but they have amplified and engaged in to become more fluent and proficient and able to make themselves heard in a way that I think we're going to continue learning from, because it's now mm-hmm. becoming public. And these things that when you look at somebody, you can't always judge what they know by looking at them. If you have any way of understanding the world around you that has more to do with feeling and sensing than looks, you can learn a lot. I've had people that they know what you're thinking, and then it makes you think, oh my, I need to improve my thoughts. I need to be more conscious of what I'm thinking, because they don't always tell you. And if more people were aware of that, it might improve us on so many levels.
It's very interesting. I will tell you that in the next book, Meet Me in Heaven, that you mentioned, I have an autistic character. And I have one of the soulmates being born with him as a brother intentionally, because in a level of sort of understanding and support, and somebody who's already communicating with him telepathically, you know, they're very bonded. But yes, I am thinking the same thing. There's a reason for us. It's about spiritual growth on a really widespread plane, really, with so many autistic children being born. I really think there's a spiritual purpose for it.
I agree. And I think that it has a lot more to do with looking beyond the physical and developing skills and abilities that we all have. And it doesn't mean everybody's going to be, you know, a five-star telepathic, empath, psychic. It means that sometimes if you get a nudge to go a different direction, you'll miss the accident. And all you have to do is listen to the nudge instead of avoiding it and say, well, I'm late. I'm going that way anyway. And that's huge. That's part of, I think, the learning curve that is being offered now as an opportunity.
Yeah, that's fascinating. We are all being guided, and it really is how much we tune in.
How old were you when you first realized that you had that connection?
How old was I? I mean, I was a grown woman. I mean, when I actually started having real communication, but I was fascinated even as a child. I was very interested in paranormal. I read a book, I must have been 8 years old. I read this book called The Reincarnation of Peter Proud. Do you remember, by any chance, remember that?
I remember the name, but I don't remember the book.
Yeah, a movie came out about it too. And it made such a huge impression on me. And it made sense to me. I remember that one really stuck with me. I read all the time as a little girl, but I was a grown woman. I was an attorney. I was practicing law the first time that I got a message that I understood was not me speaking. I remember saying to my husband, words are coming out of my mouth, and I'm waving my arms at him saying, it's not me. Like, trying to show him with my eyes, that's not me speaking. Someone was speaking through me. And that was really the most convincing thing. And after that, I felt, gradually more and more comfortable. Though I have to tell you, it was not comfortable at first and for quite a while. And I think part of that is because I was raised in the Catholic Church and I had a lot of fear around communicating with people on the other side. It felt like taboo and, I didn't know what I was doing. And what if I, was talking to something, that was harmful. And after 20 years of this, I can tell you the only thing that communications I've ever received were all very loving. Everything has come as a way to help me to realize how loved I am. And, the people around me that, my role with them, it's all been positive.
I think that's a natural instinct, is self-preservation of where is this coming from? Mm. Who is it? Why is it happening? And how does it work?
Yes.
Afterwards.
A lot of questions.
Everybody else, well, how do you know? Well, why did you trust it? What made it real for you? All those questions when somebody else might have their own sense that this is happening to them too, the first thing is, depending on your social circle, how you're going to respond. Keep it super, super, super private, or say, okay, I'm all right with this. And then you might get a couple of other nudges that say, yeah, you're good at it, so keep doing it. Keep doing it. We need more people who are good at it.
Yes.
That's the challenge of, people who have been burned in some way by somebody who either gave bad information or just had an off day. That colors it. And it isn't necessarily, anybody who does this isn't necessarily out there to make a bucket of money. Sometimes it's just because right. You can do it that it's like it's helpful. And so you do. Mm-hmm. How can I be of help?
Yes. I agree with that completely. From the beginning, I said, this is spiritual work. And that's what this is. I'm here to do whatever, to help people along on their path if there's someone. But I don't have strangers come into my house and do readings. I don't do any of that. I never charge money for any of it because it's very, very deeply personal. And if I have someone come in and I allow them into the circle to receive a communication, I trust them deeply, because otherwise I wouldn't. It's such a personal thing. Allowing my body to be used as an instrument for someone in another realm to speak through, it's just profoundly personal.
There's a lot to be said in the way that you're doing it, because in that way, it also helps keep you at a different level. You're not just working with the general public where you're doing like four readings a day or 15 readings a day or whatever and saying, okay, cookie cutter here, next, 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 next. It puts a different level of, for one thing, energy running through your body. And so that you have to take a break from. But the other thing is it also makes sure that you are authentic and there's an integrity that goes with that where you're saying, I have a boundary and this is what I commit to. And I think people don't often see that side of it where a medium says, okay, I know I can do this and I know it will be helpful, but I also have a life to live. And I also have my own ethics that I uphold. And so for you, when you switched from being, an attorney and having that kind of a 9-to-5, more of a very, I think, scripted role, lifestyle, and then to this, which is off the charts. There's really not a whole lot of knowns about what is expected in this role. And so you kind of have to make your own recipe, your own formula. And so hearing how people who are doing this manage that is also helpful.
It's interesting, Wendy, because now that we have social media, for me anyway, I feel like I'm able to sort of tap in with other people who are living similar lives. And when I first started this, I want to say it was 2009 or 10 when I was first learning to communicate, and I didn't have any of that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's changed a lot, even just in the past 5 years. Gosh, I remember doing interviews with people when it was still, oh gosh, James Redfield and what came out with that? The 10th Inside or something like that. Shirley MacLaine, Out on a Limb, even further back with the Monroe Institute and Out of Body. Learning how to tap into that mentalism with the amazing Kreskin, those kinds of things, which were kind of hit and miss. There wasn't like a whole field. I remember even the woman who, Sandra Martin, who was the agent for people like Jim Mars and Ingo Swann, and those people who she started pretty much in terms of representing new age artists, new age writers, new age authors. She started that field. And that was only in what, late 90s or so, mid 90s? And, you know, it's just that just beginning to talk about those things is still really very recent. And now having YouTube and having TikTok and having people put all their stuff out for the public to see worldwide, it's a brand new ballgame.
It really is. It's fascinating. It's like you said, it's a different world. I remember when I wrote Before We Were Born, I actually self-published it under a different title back in 2012. I put it out into the world, and I didn't say that I was a medium, but I did find someone who is a very well-known medium in this part of the country. And I asked her to read it, and she did, and she endorsed it, and that helped me a lot. But at the time, I was trying to find a publishing house that would consider it, that would look at it. And the only place I thought might work is Hay House. I mean, of course, that's the, you know, the ultimate. Right. I would have loved that, but I couldn't get it in the door. I mean, not just because I didn't have an agent to get me in, but because it seemed to be all nonfiction. And what I was selling was fiction, you know, so it's a whole different thing. I finally did, you know, come back around and look after a few years of having let this go and not thought too much about it. And I found a list of like spiritual fiction publishers. And I reached out to John Hunt and I thought, we'll see what they say. And they took the book. And so they said, we need to change the title. We changed some things, but the book is the same. And that's why I'm here talking to you right now, because otherwise I would be in this little bubble of where I live in Massachusetts and getting the book out to people, you know, in my community. And this is, you know, giving it more exposure for sure. And a lot of that is, like you said, people are looking for this now. And so people, you know, in publishing houses are offering it, and it's really awesome.
I think so too. And like I said, I had bookmarked this, and for some reason, just in right place, right time, I was going through my files and saying, whoops, hey, I put this on hold. Let's check back in. And so lo and behold, I check back in and you've got part two, which would have been really tough to wait for. Wait a second. And so now part two is there. So for all of us who like potato chips and the whole bag at once, we've got that. Now I'll ask, since I haven't read part two, is there a part three?
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at freestylelibre.us.
For prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
There may be, but if there is, it will go back in time. So I wanted to write it as a trilogy of three different lifetimes. So Before We Were Born, they're born as Joy and Jeremy. And then Meet Me in Heaven is about their next incarnation. And I will tell you that it is an easier read I wanted to go a little lighter on this one. I'll tell you, in case if you're reluctant to pick it up.
Yeah.
It's easier. The two soulmates meet on the beach here as middle schoolers. And it's about their life. And it only goes until they're 30-ish, you know, so it's small because I'm going into the future with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to go too far into the future. I just wanted to show this is these soulmates finding each other again and how they influenced each other in a different lifestyle, in a different lifetime, excuse me.
Now, you can read that book from what I've read of the reviews. You don't have to read the first book. But go ahead and read about Joy when she's a train wreck the first go-around. Because then knowing how bad it could have been.
Yes.
That's
right.
When they get it right, it's going to be a breath of fresh air. But it also real. Because I know people who have had these incredibly difficult lives. And there's a purpose each of us has in terms of meeting some kind of challenge and a desperate challenge and then overcoming that. And it helps you broaden your perspective. Not only that, you develop empathy for others who are going through the same thing when you thought you were the only one and you kicked yourself around the block 20 times for doing something so incredibly stupid and then realizing, oh, but I wouldn't have been here if I hadn't done that. I wouldn't have met so-and-so if I hadn't. I wouldn't have learned. I wouldn't have had compassion for the other person because I know how easy it is to get sucked into a drain and then come out of it and say, wow, I have a better idea of what I can avoid next time. And why not to be so judgmental?
That's true. Isn't that part of it? It really is, you know, because we are. I am, you know, I still am. I'm judgmental and I, you know, critical. When I shouldn't be.
Yeah.
So the next incarnation is easier. It's a little more, what's the word I'm looking for? I'll circle back on that one. They're middle schoolers, but they're both very intelligent and very perceptive. And we know by this point that they are, you know, old souls. They have been around a number of lifetimes together. And so this is where they've come to. And it's really lovely because it's a bit of a reward for them in a sense. And they still have bumps. They still have some issues. Everything is not ever going to be, you know, perfectly, peachy all the time. But it's a really nice lifetime for them. And yeah, I wanted to show that. So the real challenging one, Wendy, will be if I go back in time, which is the lifetime before we were born is when they were Native Americans.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say there's probably no microwave.
No microwave. Nope.
You know, no cushy luxuries, you know, like that, and indoor heating and plumbing.
That will take a lot of work on my part, doing a lot of research and really deciding how I want to go about it as well. But, you know, they talk about it a lot. And before we were born, about that lifetime and how they lost each other in that lifetime when he passed over and she learned how to communicate with him. And so in before we were born, it comes back to her easier because of that. She's done it before. Her soul has been through this. So it's getting her body adjusted to it.
Do the Native American guides play the same kind of a role in that second one, Meet Me in Heaven?
They do. It's similar. It's lighter. And also, we talked about the book being romantic before we were born. It's a very romantic idea to say there are these two souls who follow each other through lifetimes. And they have this ongoing love for each other, and it's very romantic. But then you hit the earth and it's bumpy. We talked about all that, right? It's like you're not always soaring in the clouds.
Kind of like a fly on the windshield, not quite that bad, but yeah.
But yes, I understand the metaphor. But in this one I focused a lot on a different connection, which is brothers. So that kind of soulmate that isn't romantic, because that's a thing too. I mean, we all have so many different kinds of soulmates, but there is like a brother situation in this one where both of them are here to make sure that this goes well this time.
Okay.
So there's an incarnation that comes with it. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So a little bit broader I guess it may be a broader story with the that additional characters.
Yeah. One of the guides incarnates and the other one does not, but they're, you know, they're referenced, but we start it right from the get-go on planet Earth, other than there's like one little, there's a page by each of them, their spirit selves, talking about what they've decided to do and what they're expecting will happen and why they're going, you know, why they're going to particular people. And then after that, you're back on Earth, and Jeff, who was Jeremy's best friend, it kind of opens up the book talking about where his life has come.
Yeah. All right. That's a good one. I'm curious. In terms of past lives and in between lives and all that, I remember having a dream as a kid. It was more than a dream. The gist of it was I came back and I had in this dream been back to the Circle of One, my group, my soul group, and remembering and having my angel book that told me what was happening. And I had all the answers. I remember I was so euphoric because I finally knew, okay, this is why I'm here. This is what happens and this is how it plays out. And I was thrilled. I was going to bring that book back because I could follow it along and make sure I checked off all the boxes. And as I came through this gray cloud, my hand with the book was stuck, you know, like the cookie jar.
Oh.
And that book, I could not bring it through with me. And I woke up, I was so irritated because
yes.
In that state, I knew it. I had the answers. But what I remembered was, okay, I've been here before. I know how this works. I'll make it through. I just don't have the answers I thought I had.
That's a very beautiful dream that you had.
Yeah.
And it really encapsulates what happens, because we do have the information once we're on the other side, then we come here and it's part of the agreement is you can't carry it all with you.
No.
If you could, it would change the way you live your life.
Yeah. I think you wouldn't be able to learn the lessons. And that's the whole thing, is that you have to go through it blind. You have to go through it doing the best you can with the ability you have in the moment to understand it and integrate it and imprint it, because learning it isn't just about reading a book. It's about living it. And that's what we do here.
Yes. Wow. The fly on the windshield. I'm still thinking about that.
Well,
right?
It was kind of rough.
It's rough, but it's true. I mean, it's the same. It's very similar to your hand being stuck where the book can't come into the physical plane.
Yeah.
The book is spirit matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's not physical matter, and it can't make it here. Just like as you're becoming physically human, you know, you can't carry the spiritual part with you. But you have a recollection in you somewhere, and that's what we recognize when, you know, you meet someone, you feel something, and, you know, it's the intuition is really so important, because that's the reminder.
I think that's a lot of what it is about, and especially, you know, the stuff that it's now okay to talk about it. I had this hunch, I had this sense, I had this feeling. It's normal. It's very natural. And the fact that we couldn't talk about it made it a taboo. It created a barrier. And for some people, it convinced them that it was not okay to even feel it. So now, when you and I are talking about these kinds of experiences and these kinds of abilities and your fiction that tells a story of the potentials, because you've had your own experience to be able to put that into a story, to give people an imagination capable of connecting dots that they already know. And that's a lot of what I think is important about this, is remembering. You said it earlier. It wasn't something that you learned. It was more a matter of remembering than learning.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's crucial. I believe that's what we do, accidentally or intentional. It's in there. It's in there. It's one of our sub-programs.
Yes, because as we learn something, the way that it hits is like, oh, it doesn't hit like, no, you're not denying it. There's something in you that already knows it's true.
Mm-hmm. So as we continue evolving and growing and challenging ourselves to endure the school of hard knocks,
mm-hmm.
we can have empathy for other characters who may be slower, or even those who are faster, because that's what it's all about. We share so many things without ever having an idea of just how incredible this is to be human, to be here, period. It's just an amazing way to, I think, evolve and to become more spiritual while you're in a body.
Yeah, I always think of it as like becoming more of who we are, more of who we really are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting back to that original sort of, you know, love and everything that makes up the part of us that's eternal.
Yeah, I just wish I had my angel book. I really wanted to be able to fill in some blanks.
Yes.
And it's like, man, it was there.
How old were you happened with you?
I think I was in my late teens. I think I was, somewhere, late teens, 20s, somewhere in there, because it was so real. And it was so frustrating, because in one moment I had it all. And the circle of one is what I remember. So that was my group. And, felt like, oh, I belong here. This is home. This is where I live, where I come from. And I actually had talked to a few children about their past life memories. And I've had one say this with a dog. I had a German Shepherd. I think he was probably 5 at the time. He said, he and I both, we were together. And he moved his hands around and he said it was a blue ball, that they both came from the blue ball. And it was like about the size of a basketball, you know, that he was making it, and like he's 5. And he recognized my dog, Max, the German Shepherd, who was an old soul. And it was just so amazing to have him use that language, that he recognized Max and they both came from that same, and I would call it the circle of one, the blue ball. So I thought, wow, okay, different language. And to me, a similar meaning, a similar understanding of coming from that source.
That's wonderful.
I just find these things fascinating.
Absolutely. Is the dream what set you on your path, would you say?
There were other things. It just made me more sure of having been here before. More sure that this wasn't my first rodeo.
I see.
that maybe I had a few things that I could pull out of that, you know, out of that learning somehow. But it was so joyful. Even though I was irritated, it was like, wow, that is incredible. It was just that sense of everything made sense. Even though I couldn't remember it, there was that feeling, I think, of just, it's okay now. You're okay. I'm okay. It's okay. I think it put some of my questions to rest of what is this all about? Why am I here? What's the purpose? What's the point? You know, this is just so messed up and people are mean and, you know, everything's, and that was like, no, that isn't it at all. And it just gave me a way to have a different perspective outside of myself, to know that there was something bigger going on. And in some way I was a part of that. So that, I think that was, you know, but there were other things that happened for me that were also curious, like that paranormal, that other relationship kind of thing with things we don't see, that made me want to continue. And I didn't start doing anything until I was 39. That's when everything changed.
Oh, I think I might've been that age as well.
Yeah. It's an interesting time. And but that's that's when I had, I guess, completed my list of things I had to do, whether I wanted to or not, and then started one that I really had to do or I wouldn't graduate, whether I wanted to or not, but began to feel called to pay attention to spirit, to other things, to my guides, and to people who were no longer physical. That became more important.
You know, it's because it's so interesting that the people that we love that pass over, what blew me away the most was the fact that I could continue having a relationship with them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I never would have believed that, you know, but it's true. And they're here whenever you want to talk to them. So if you say their name or you think about them, they're here to respond. And it's really the onus is on us to start that. It's just mind-blowing to me. But I do have a relationship with people who are on the other side of life, not just my guides, but, you know, my sister. Thank God I can talk to my sister, because I'm her daughter's godmother, and I've been able to connect them. So she'll come and she'll, there's a whole long story I won't say, you know, on air, but she, my niece really needed that affirmation about her mom. And it's just, I feel, you know, really very, very privileged to be able to have access to that.
And then I did want to return to that, because when you mentioned that and said she just walked out through the wall and then said she would come back, I think there's a recent passing that I was involved in. And the thing is, immediately when he stepped out, immediately he was ready to, hey, tell so-and-so. And he wanted it done. It was very important. And that's right after he was transitioning. It happens before they leave the body, but that was his first thing, was to connect with his significant other and say, it's okay, just let him know. And with that, then though, there is that little period of in between where they have some things they have to take care of, and then they can come back and they check on all their people. That's what happens. And whether we see them or not, you can sense them. Some people are better at that than others, but that's huge. It's huge, and it's part of who we are, and it's part of what we experience in transitioning from a physical to a non-physical form of being, of afterlife.
That's a wonderful experience that you were there and able to receive that message so quickly, and that's wonderful that he was able to do it, but also that you were able to pick up on it.
What I wanted to know with your sister, you said she walked out. So when did she check back in?
Well, it was a little while later because I was 38 when she passed. She was 45. And I think, you know, it was a few years beyond that when I really started being able to communicate. But the first thing that happened after that is that's when we found out that there's a spiritualist church. There was one in our town. It's not there now, but there wasn't. My husband went, and we had a new baby at home, and I was home with her and my older daughter, and he went to this church, and the pastor called on him and said, you have someone here named Mary. She's got her hands on your shoulders, and that's my sister. And he said, he said a few things that I don't even recall, but the thing that stuck is my husband's a musician, and he was in between gigs, and the medium, the pastor, picked up on that and said, I asked him, are you a musician? Are you an artist? Is it something like that? I said, yeah, I'm a musician. And he said, so Mary is telling you that there's a new job coming to you soon. So don't get discouraged, because a new job is coming in music. And he ended up getting a call a week or two later. He gets a call from this band that was her favorite local band. We had never met them. She had, when she was still here. And it was just like, what? How does that, you know?
Yeah.
That was in the beginning of like, oh my God, is this all real? You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And that's how these stepping stones, these things happen. It took me a long time to realize that dream of my sister was actually a mediumship experience that I think we all have. And some of us remember and some don't. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think we're communicating with them when we're sleeping.
Yeah. Yeah. That's because the brain isn't trying to figure out how much the groceries are and, you know, mm-hmm. whether or not you can afford this new car. Yeah. Those kind of things.
Right.
All that stuff's
gone.
That's
a good point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it is. It's the 9-to-5 stuff that we have to, you know, and reading the news or enjoying some kind of entertainment somewhere, whatever. Those things during the day are on hold. So at night, there's an opportunity to make these other connections that are super important. And if you can do a dream journal, you are miles ahead. Because if you start paying attention to how that works, then you'll pick up on some clues that might have been dropped like breadcrumbs waiting for you to make the connection.
Right.
Well,
it is an opportunity.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more receptivity now. And I'm so glad that you're telling your story and you're doing it in fiction, because not everybody gets to go to the meetings. They don't tune into certain kinds of opportunities where this stuff is presented. But people reading, just taking a break, time out, and enjoying a story, and then expanding their universe of potentials and possibilities by listening and engaging with a story is so easy. It makes it effortless.
Well, thank you for saying that. I really, that is my goal, is to share what has helped me so much, you know, and just in terms of understanding that I'm not going to end, which is so self-centered to say, but in my mind, that was one of the most important things in the beginning, was finding out, oh, there is no death. Not really. Having the opportunity to share that with people in the way that's kind of, you know, feels right to me and is fun for me to tell a story. I love that. If people are able to take that away, that's fantastic. That's just a win-win on my part.
I think so. And I'm glad. I mean, I didn't realize that the second book was just recently, and the first book I had just read, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is a potato chip bag. Wow. Why? There's another one. There's part two. And then you're talking about part three. So they're available on Amazon. Your website is KathleenReadyDiane.com. If you could give somebody a positive insight of what it's like to transition, because you were an attorney. It's a big jump from becoming an attorney to a full-time writer and a medium. The kind of, you know, the writer first, and then the medium is where it's like, okay, that's way, way off the chart. But how did that work?
I believe that life is a leap of faith. I believe that taking a leap of faith is huge. It's where I've always landed in the best places in my life. And walking away from the practice of law was a huge leap of faith, because it was really hard. I went through law school as a single mom. And I mean, I worked really hard to get that degree. And so it was hard to, you know, walk away from that. But it didn't fit anymore. You know, it's like there was this whole sort of metaphorical, symbolic thing that went on with me getting rid of all my suits, because they just didn't, I didn't want them in my house. I didn't want to wear, and I wanted to wear like the clothes that I really love to wear. And it was not fitting me anymore. And so that was, the job didn't fit me anymore. And the lifestyle didn't fit me anymore. And, you know, just tuning into myself and trusting that this was right. That was a big part of this. So, but I also have to say, I have a really good partner. And, you know, as I, you know, talked about Idan, my husband, he's my partner in mediumship. He's my partner in everything. And I'm not saying that in a financial way, as in, oh, he'll pay the bills. It wasn't that. It's just the emotional support of, we'll figure this out. This is the right path. This is what we're going to do. There was no feeling of pressure that I had to stay from anybody else in my life, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I did talk to people in spirit about it, and they don't give me advice. Like, they never say, like, you should do this, or you should, you know that, how
right.
that goes.
Right.
That's not their job. That's not their role. They did tell me not to be afraid, you know, and I got the very strong sense that it's okay, and this is all going to be fine. And it was almost like I could feel, when I was asking them that, sometimes I feel like they're laughing. Like, this is,
yes,
you know?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
That feeling,
yes.
And you're like, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. I'm making a big, seems like a big deal to me.
Uh-huh.
Seems like a big deal here on the earth plane.
Oh, yeah.
But you're like, come on, it's all right. It's not a big deal. Just keep moving on. You're on this spirit path.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense to stay on your spirit path. I think that's what it is.
There's if I could say anything about the experiences I've had, they just think we take things entirely too literal and seriously. It's like, if we can imagine something, it's like worst case scenario first. It's like, just step back on that and don't put a scenario on it. Let it reveal itself to you and quit raining on the parade before there's even any rain in the sky. Because
mm-hmm.
that's how it happens.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, it can. Yes, I'm terrible about that. Yes,
yes.
I know. And they,
yeah.
they do. They have their perspective is entirely different. You know, they're not coming from a place of fear. And I sometimes am, you know, and that's,
yes.
that always gets
yes.
in my way.
Yeah. Well, and that's the biggest thing. It's the removing the fear and developing trust and understanding there may be a hard knock or two, but once you get past that, then everything smooths out. and the person you're supposed to meet or the connection you're supposed to make is there, but you have to take the first step. You have to take that first step. And so that's where it's difficult, is that first step is always like, oh, getting through the mind fog and saying, just put it out there. You know, it's like going into a haunted house and at the same time knowing that there are no ghosts. It's just fiction. It's just created. It's self manufactured. Oh, that's good. Manufactured. Isn't that a Freudian? Man-made.
Yes, I kind of like that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Man-made. And so once you realize, oh, I'm the ghost. Okay. Because then you break all the barriers and the boundaries and you say, okay, this is possible. The fear and that endless self-doubt of, is this really something I can do? Am I capable? Am I worthy? Those kinds of things. Those are the things we're challenged to deal with. And once, like, you have that supportive partner, yeah, you're right, it's not about the money. It's about somebody who is emotionally secure in their own being so that they know that what you're doing is right for you. And that's usually the way that manifests, is that there's a confidence, a security, and then it gives you permission to put yourself out there, to take the leap of faith and say, it's okay, we got this. It's amazing. It's amazing. And I'm so glad that, you know, you trusted, because the stories you have to share are very helpful and inspiring. And that's, you know, that's the way it works when you're ready to take that leap.
Yeah, it's fun, right? It is a lot of fun.
It's nice when you can help somebody connect a dot. That's why I do it, is that it's that sense of, I don't want to be wrong. I don't want to do the wrong. I don't want to hurt anybody. I don't want to say something out of step. But if I can make a connection for someone and they can't get it any other way, that's why I'm here. And I have to trust that. At first, just like you said, it was challenging. It's like, do I really want to put myself out there? Do I want to own that title? No. So I'll just do it and not worry about the title.
Right. Until, yes. And then it shifts, though. You know, you, at some point I had to own it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I just did. And if people look at me sideways or what, it's not my business anymore. You know, what people think about that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like what you're talking about, you know, passing messages on and making these connections with people. And it's sacred work. Mm-hmm. It's just, you can't think about too much about what other people are judging you as. When what you're doing, you know, you can feel that it's shifting something for someone.
Not only that, those who others can't see and you're working with them, they know you. They are the ones that we are accountable to. And so if I am able to make a connection, which happened earlier when I had ahead of time said, if there's anything I can do, let me know. And this is before this person transitioned. So after they transitioned, and I was kind of hemming and hawing because I wasn't sure, you know, socially, is this the right time? The person is grieving. It was just all those questions of my own. Is this appropriate? And then from the spirit side saying, you said you would help. And I was like, okay, fine. All right, we're done. Yeah, I got it. I'll do it. But those kinds of things, they see us, they know what we're doing, and they know when we're hemming and hawing and stalling or faking it. All right, so that's actually a little bit more important than anybody else here on the physical plane, because those guys have more power as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
They're my karma. Right. Okay, they're my karma. So I have to uphold my end of the bargain and not put out something that I am not accountable for. Does that make sense?
Yes, I understand. I do.
So if that helps solve some things for people, you know, that there is an answer and there is accountability for anybody who does this. Okay. And that's what we are up for when we accept the challenge. All right.
Yes.
The book, two of them so far. Number three, research. Okay. That'll be interesting.
Yes, I'll let you know about that one. It's going to be a little bit.
That's called history, historical novel.
It really is historical fiction, and I'm going to want to get this right, you know, and yeah, it's going to take a lot.
Okay. All right. Well, you're up to the challenge. That's why you're doing what you're doing. So go, charge on. I'll take that and send it to you if you need it occasionally.
Yeah.
So, hey, thank you. Thank you. I really enjoyed talking with you. I'm so glad. It was like, huh, maybe I need to make a phone call and set this interview up. And it was like the perfect time and the perfect place. And so I'm looking forward to, I guess, waiting it out for number three. But in the meantime, I enjoyed the first one. Yes, she deserves a kick, but she'll make it.
You will like that soul better on the next book.
Okay.
I promise that.
Okay, thank you. I feel better now.
Yeah.
All right. So if anybody wants to get in touch with you through your website, do you do a blog or anything else?
I don't have a blog, but you can, there's an email address. You can reach out to me through the website.
Thank you. I appreciate your time and all of your creativity.
Thank you so much, Wendy. I really enjoyed talking to you. And yeah, thank you for having me on.
Kathleen, Diane.
There is no death. Not really. Having the opportunity to share that with people and the way that's kind of, you know, feels right to me and is fun for me to tell a story. I love that. If people are able to take that away, that's fantastic. That's just a win-win on my part.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.